Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in this segment, we're going to take a look at the curious and very important, I shouldn't say curious, but the very important affair concerning what many have billed as the last trial of Nazi war criminals. This concerns the trial of a former SS officer named Erich Priebke, last name Priebke, who has been extradited to Italy to stand trial for the massacre of a number of Italian citizens, some 335 Italian citizens, in reprisal for an attack that killed some 33 German soldiers in World War II. Research credit on all of the articles that we're going to be reading in this segment goes to Dave White, our pan-European translator and researcher, who has done his characteristically excellent work and has shared it with us in characteristically selfless fashion. The first article is researched for us, again by Dave White, and it comes from the London Independent of Thursday, June 13th of 1996. This article is by Andrew Gumbel, G-U-M-B-E-L, and it's headlined, The Nazi and the Protection Racket, subtitled, The trial in Rome of an old man for war crimes might have been a straightforward affair, but when a key witness fell from a second-floor window, suspicions of a cover-up suddenly seemed plausible. Andrew Gumbel reports. The article reads, An octogenarian Nazi is hunted down and found living in comfortable exile in the mountains of southern Argentina. In due course, he is arrested and extradited to Italy, where he is wanted for involvement in one of the most notorious massacres of the Second World War, the shooting of 335 civilians in March of 1944 in the Adriatine Caves on the outskirts of Rome. He then goes on trial for war crimes against humanity, and a handful of surviving eyewitnesses duly testify to his ruthlessness and bureaucratic zealotry during his time as second-in-command at Gestapo headquarters in Rome. A guilty verdict looks a near certainty. At first sight, the case against Erich Priebke seems a straightforward, if emotionally fraught, affair, a piece of historical justice finally tidied up after more than 50 years of neglect. Surely, one supposes, the only harm that this 83-year-old man with his dapper gray suits and his Tyrolean hats can still do at this stage is to stir up unpleasant memories. It is only a matter of time, one feels, before the Rome military court does its duty and lays the past finally to rest. If only it were that simple. The longer the Priebke trial goes on, it has been in progress for just over a month, the more sensational and terrifyingly relevant it becomes. Old documents thought lost, and old SS officers long thought to be dead have suddenly popped up to challenge the official version of history. The list of organizations suspected of protecting Priebke in South America for so many years now includes the Vatican, the CIA, and Mossad, the Israeli counter-espionage service. According to several witnesses, the secret network known as ODESSA, that's spelled capital O-D-E-S-S-A, which smuggled scores of Nazis out of Europe into exile in the 1940s and 50s, is still operating, helping Hitler's old underlings in Latin America to build up commercial links with multinational companies in Europe and the U.S. Plenty of old Nazis continue to live as well as Priebke used to, not because they have managed to disguise their true identity, indeed many are happy to use their real names, but because they enjoy international protection at the highest level. I would add the Odessa has had many different involvements. They've been involved in the arms traffic, as well as protecting members of the SS. They've also been deeply involved with a number of intelligence services, including the German intelligence service and the U.S. intelligence services as well. These last few sentences again, because, again, it's comparatively rare to see contemporary journalistic references to this legendary organization. According to several witnesses, the secret network known as Odessa, which smuggled scores of Nazis out of Europe into exile in the 1940s and 50s, is still operating, helping Hitler's old underlings in Latin America to build up commercial links with multinational companies in Europe and the U.S. Plenty of old Nazis continue to live as well as Priebke used to, not because they have managed to disguise their true identity, indeed many are happy to use their real names, but because they enjoy international protection at the highest level. This sounds like the stuff of fantasy spy thrillers, but the passions it has aroused are all too real. Take the case of Karl Haas, H-A-S-S, a fellow SS officer of Priebke's during the war, who promised to be the prosecution's star witness after he made some explosive allegations in advance interviews with the Rome newspaper Il Messaggero. Nobody realized Haas was still alive until 2 weeks ago, when prosecutors tracked him down at his home in Switzerland and persuaded him to testify. But last Thursday night, a few hours before he was due to take the stand, something or someone spooked Haas so badly that he decided to run for it. Not daring even to walk out of the front door of his hotel, he tried instead to climb out of a second-floor window. Perhaps inevitably for an 84-year-old, and an asthmatic at that, he slipped, breaking his pelvis as he crashed down on a row of flower pots. Later, as he lay immobilized in Rome's main military hospital, Haas failed to give a coherent account of what he had done, describing it only as, quote, a moment of idiocy, unquote. Yesterday, when he was finally heard by prosecutors in a special session around his sickbed, he went ahead with his testimony, but changed his story completely, in effect backing up Priebke's line of defense and admitting for the first time that he had taken part in the massacre himself. What kind of a man is Erich Priebke that he can still cause such histrionics half a century after the events in question? What ghouls remain to be exorcised from those dark wartime days when all of Rome lived in the shadow of the Gestapo headquarters on Via Tasso? For many years, Priebke's reputation made him out to be the typical Nazi bureaucrat, a man whose cruelty stemmed less from the torture and killing that went on under his nose than from the obsessive pleasure he took in codifying and cataloging it all in bland, euphemistic language. Gradually, however, evidence has accumulated that Priebke was rather more than a passive participant in the horrors of Nazism. According to declassified documents compiled at the time by the U.S. Secret Services, Priebke volunteered for the Gestapo as early as 1936, and was soon employed to draw up lists of Jews, gypsies, and other undesirables destined for deportation to the death camps. Several resistance fighters who suffered in the cellars of the Gestapo building in Rome have testified that Priebke himself took turns as a torturer, punching his victims in the ribs with a knuckle duster and telling them, "I'm sorry, but you have to talk. You're going to be shot anyway, but you can avoid a lot of suffering that you won't be able to resist," unquote. The massacre at the Adriatine Caves showed Priebke in his most sinister light. On March 23, 1944, during celebrations to mark the 25th anniversary of the rise of fascism in Italy, a detachment of SS officers was blown up by a resistance bomb left in a dustbin in Via Rasella in the center of Rome. Priebke's boss, Herbert Koppler, K-A-P-P-L-E-R, received word from Berlin that 10 people were to be rounded up and shot in retaliation for each of the 33 soldiers killed. It was Priebke who compiled the list of the victims, picking Jews, resistance fighters, and their families, the youngest just 15, and common criminals culled from the city's Regina Coeli jail. It was Priebke who also ticked off their names as they were led in groups of five or six into a dark corner at the back of the caves and shot through the back of the neck. The cave was later blown up on a half-successful attempt to cover up the evidence. Some of the victims have never been identified. Quite who did the shooting has never been fully established either. Somewhere along the line, five extra names were added to the list, bringing the total number of people killed in the massacre to 335. Priebke insists this was mere oversight. Those who knew him at the time, however, suspected him of deliberately inflating the total out of sheer vindictiveness. It was on the basis of these extra names that Priebke, Koppler, and four others were ordered to stand trial before an Italian military tribunal in 1948. At the time, the court broadly accepted the excuse that participants in the massacre had been obeying orders, and that they risked being executed themselves if they did not comply. Koppler, who took responsibility for the five extra deaths, was sentenced to life imprisonment, while the four others were acquitted. Priebke himself never went to trial because he had escaped from a prisoner of war camp in Rimini and disappeared. Where had he gone? According to Nazi hunters as well as several old Nazis, Priebke was spirited out of Italy via the Rat Line, an escape route organized by a pro-Nazi German bishop called Alois Hudal with the blessing of Pope Pius XII. The Vatican has always denied the existence of the Rat Line, but when Priebke eventually resurfaced in San Carlo de Bariloche in Patagonia, one of his next-door neighbors turned out to be a close associate of Bishop Hudal's, a former German army lieutenant called Reinhard Kops. That's spelled K-O-P-S. By the way, interjecting, The rat line is discussed at considerable length in RFA 17 as well. This rat line was accomplished in connection with German intelligence. Of U.S. intelligence, excuse me. Continuing. Priebke fitted right into this world, running first a hotel and then a delicatessen specializing in cold cuts of German sausage. In due course, he became chairman of the local German-Argentine Cultural Association and governor of a newly built German language school. He never felt the slightest concern about the past catching up with him. He kept his old name and old passport, and was regularly listed in the local telephone directory. His peace might never have been disturbed but for an ABC television crew who, with the help of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, tracked him down and interviewed him in March of 1994. By the way, I would note that in our last segment I discussed the bombing of a Jewish cultural center in Buenos Aires in the summer of 1994. Records concerning Nazi war criminals who had fled to Argentina were stored in that records. Apparently the records had been moved shortly before then. One of the questions I have is whether perhaps that bombing was in retaliation for the discovery of Erich Priebke and subsequently his extradition. Continuing. I'm beginning again with a sentence that I just finished. His peace might never have been disturbed but for an ABC television crew who, with the help of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, tracked him down and interviewed him in March of 1994. Priebke denied killing anybody at the Adriatine Caves, but the ABC team also unearthed the confession he had made in 1946, in which he admitted shooting two of the victims personally. Suddenly, the whole case burst open again. Within 2 months, Priebke was under arrest, and last November, he was at last flown back to Italy for trial. Only now has the full weirdness of the affair begun to come to light. According to several experts consulted during the trial, Priebke and countless other Nazis in Latin America enjoyed high-level protection from international security services. The Chilean writer Luis Sepulveda believes it was a conspiracy that it even includes Mossad. Mossad succeeded in finding Adolf Eichmann, one of the architects of the Final Solution, tried and executed in Jerusalem in 1961, and yet never managed to find Josef Mengele, the notorious Angel of Death, who conducted vile experiments on the inmates at Auschwitz. Quote, Mossad knew Mengele was in Paraguay looking out for certain interests, unquote, Sepulveda claimed on a visit to Rome a few days ago. It seems Karl Haas was about to reveal similar information before his abrupt change of heart. In his newspaper interviews, Haas said he himself had been protected and had thus been able to remain incognito in Italy where he lived until recently, while the world assumed he had died. He also offered tantalizing new leads on the whereabouts of the gold the Nazis stole from the coffers of central banks around Europe. Half, he said, was still buried beneath a fortress near Bolzano in the South Tyrol, while the other half had disappeared from its hiding place under Monte Serrate just north of Rome. Haas also intended to shed new light on the age-old conundrum whether SS members were really obliged to carry out the massacre on pain of death, or if they participated willingly. Before his botched nighttime flit, Haas said the notion that the massacre had been, quote, compulsory, unquote, was merely a ruse that the SS had invented to avoid prosecution after the war. This coincided with testimony from other witnesses, including from, beyond the grave, Herbert Koppler himself. A few days ago, as if by magic, an old television interview with Koppler resurfaced in which the Gestapo chief admitted telling his subordinates to lie about their complicity in the massacre and plead that they were forced to obey orders. It is hard to know what to believe anymore, whether witnesses to this trial are acting in good faith or being manipulated by occult forces still active a half century after the defeat of Nazism. Evidence has a habit of jumping out of nowhere, then vanishing back into the ether. To guess what might happen to Priebke, one should first look at the fate of his old boss, Herbert Koppler. Here was a man who looked set to spend the rest of his days behind bars. But then, in 1977, his wife managed to spirit him out of a Rome military hospital in a suitcase, and he spent the remaining few months of his life in freedom. A gesture of humanity by the Italians toward a sick old man, or a sinister international plot. The Priebke trial is bringing all the old rumors bubbling back to the surface and raising more questions than it can possibly hope to answer. indeed it has. I would note that in RFA 20 and in RFA 28, I touched on the escape of Herbert Koppler. This was accomplished with the aid of the legendary Odessa Network and indeed SS men or former SS men. I personally don't believe there's any such thing as a former SS man. They take a pledge of loyalty to the principles of Hitler for life. And as far as I've been able to determine, they adhere to that oath rigorously. However, SS men from Colonia Dignidad, a Nazi colony in Chile, were involved with the escape of Herbert Koppler. Again, I've talked about that in RFA 20. I've also talked about that in RFA 28. I would note that the Colonia Dignidad compound was used as a training ground for tortures for the Pinochet government in Chile. And in fact, some of the political prisoners of the Pinochet government were in fact tortured at Colonia Dignidad. Dignidad was also connected with an international fascist assassination consortium run by Latin American countries in cooperation with Spanish and Italian fascists. That assassination operation was called Operation Condor, and among its victims was Orlando Letelier in Washington, D.C. in September of 1976. Indeed, it appears that fascist elements within U.S. intelligence were complicit with this particular operation. I would also note the reference to Karl Haas talking about the gold that had been looted from central banks of various countries in Europe, that some of it was supposedly still buried near a fortress near Bolzano in the South Tyrol. I discussed that as well in RFA 20, dealing with the notorious Stibom Arms for Drugs ring, not a name very well known in the United States, but an institution, namely Stibom, with more connections than a switchboard, those connections being Italian, German and U.S. intelligence, the notorious P2 Lodge, the Drug Enforcement Agency, the Banco Ambrosiano, and others. Indeed, the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring figures prominently in the background of, well, not the background, but figures prominently in the milieu involved with the shooting of Pope John Paul II in May of 1981. Stibom also appears to have been involved in a number of arms trafficking scandals, quite possibly the Iran-Contra scandal as well. May have been involved in the Iraqgate arms transfers also. Again, Stibom is discussed in RFA 20. I touched on it in a half-hour segment updating the investigation into the shooting of the Pope. That half-hour segment, like the other half-hour segments I've been producing for the last year or so, available from Spitfire. And if I have time at the end of this segment, I will discuss, I'll give the address, etc., for Spitfire. So again, let's take some time to review some of the things that we've looked at in this particular article. The article discusses the circumstances surrounding the Priebke trial and notes that, according to a number of experts on fugitive Nazi war criminals, the legendary Odessa Network, the post-World War II SS Underground, again an institution with more connections than a switchboard, including connections to U.S. and German intelligence, is not only still active, but has been helping some of Hitler's old underlings, as this article puts it, to build up commercial links with multinational companies in Europe and the United States. I would note, too, that according to this article, Erich Priebke escaped from prison in Italy with the help of the Rat Line. That was the Vatican and U.S. intelligence escape network that helped so many fugitives from justice, so many Third Reich operatives to escape from Europe, where those who have enjoyed good health still are to be found to this day, as this article indicates. Again, the Odessa Network has more connections than a switchboard, and according to one tantalizing detail asserted here by a Chilean expert named Luis Sepulveda, the Mossad, the Israeli counter-espionage service, is among those intelligence services that has helped to cover up, for whatever reasons, some of the operations of the Odessa and the presence of accused Nazi war criminals in Latin America. Note also the revelations of Karl Haas, who was believed to have been vanished or died but turned up, and maintained that he, as we shall see, had numerous connections protecting him after World War II. He discussed the gold now allegedly still hidden beneath a fortress near Bolzano in Italy, And again, that is discussed in RFA 20 and connected with the Stibom Arms for Drugs ring. Note also that the escape of Herbert Koppler is discussed here. That escape arranged with arranged by the International SS Underground in the Odessa and connected with Colonia Dignidad, again, another in Chile, another institution with, as I like to say, more connections and a switchboard. More about Carl Haas, again, one of the witnesses against Eric Priebke, who curiously went out a window after experiencing, well, who knows? But who knows whether that escape out the window or that fall from the window was indeed an escape attempt, or whether perhaps Carl Haas was delivered a message by element or elements unknown. Certainly, Carl Haas also appears to have had more connections than a switchboard. Research and translation credit for the following article also goes to Dave White. This is from La Stampa of Wednesday, June 13th of 1996. It's an article entitled, Haas Says He Fired First. Witness Carl Haas told an Italian court yesterday that he, Koppler, and Kohler were among the first people to open fire on the prisoners. Quote, we had to set an example for our soldiers, unquote. Haas, an SS major in charge of espionage activities, collaborated with the CIA, CFAR, and the BND. CFAR spelled capital S, capital I, capital F, capital A, capital R. It's one of Italy's post-World War II intelligence services. The BND is the German intelligence service and the final incarnation of the Reinhard Gehlen spy outfit that I've spoken about so often. The final incarnation of Hitler's Eastern Front Intelligence Organization, which jumped first to the CIA and finally was incorporated as the German Intelligence Service when the Federal Republic was incorporated in the mid-50s. So note again that Carl Haas has numerous connections here. More connections of Carl Haas were revealed in an article, again researched and translated for us by Dave White. This article is from the Corriere della Sera of Wednesday, June 26th of 1996. This article is entitled, Germany Issues Arrest Warrants for Haas and Priebke. According to the next issue of L'Avvenimento, former SS Major Carl Haas, quote, was a colonel in the Gladio version of Operation Stay Behind. Haas lived in Italy for 40 years and worked for the Italian services. In the mid-50s, he received his first phony passport from CFAR. The ex-Nazi changed his identity 8 times and was responsible for organizing a coup together with Salo Republic veterans in the event of a left-wing victory at the polls. Well, Operation Stay Behind was a NATO operation put together to set up guerrilla groups to harass the Red Army in the event of a successful Soviet invasion of Western Europe. Operation Gladio was the Italian version of that. It appears that Operation Stay Behind and its Italian manifestation, Operation Gladio, both of them, by the way, according to the book The New Reich by Michael Schmidt, masterminded by the aforementioned Reinhard Gehlen, Operation Stay Behind and Operation Gladio in particular appear to have given rise not to guerrilla groups to harass the Red Army, but rather to a program of right-wing and fascist terror, which manifested itself in Italy as the strategy of tension that I've spoken about so often. This was a program of right-wing terrorist incidents, usually blamed on the left and intended to not only discredit the left, but to drive the Italian political electorate to the right. The Salo Republic alluded to here was a last-ditch fascist rump government in Italy at the end of World War II, and it appears that the coup attempt referred to here is either the Rosa de Vente coup or the Borghese coup attempt of 1970, both assisted by U.S. intelligence and both provided arms by the very famous Otto Skorzeny, the legendary Otto Skorzeny, one of Hitler's personal favorites, the commando extraordinaire, and one of the prime movers in the Odessa network, an individual who worked not only for the Reinhard Gehlen outfit, but also for the CIA after World War II. More about Carl Haas, again an individual with more connections than a switchboard. This was researched again, translated again by Dave White from La Stampa of Wednesday, June 26th of 1996. This article is entitled, Germany Orders the Arrest of Priebke. The article reads, the German prosecutor's office in Dortmund ordered the arrests of Eric Priebke, now on trial in Rome, and Carl Haas, a witness. The German government had already asked Argentina to hand over Priebke some time ago, but Buenos Aires never answered the request formally. According to the next issue of L'Avvenimento, former SS Major Haas, quote, was a colonel in the Gladio version of Operation Stay Behind and maintained contact with other ex-Nazis around the world. We've seen the reference to Operation Gladio before. By the way, there's a miscellaneous archive show dealing with Operation Gladio. The strategy of tension is discussed in RFA 19, and there are a couple of miscellaneous half-hour segments available from Spitfire that also discuss Operation Gladio and Operation Stay Behind. Note here that the reference to Priebke being in touch with other ex-Nazis around the world is probably a reference to the aforementioned legendary Odessa Network. The last article we're going to read also is researched for us by Dave White. This article is from the London Times. Alas, I do not have a date for this particular article. It is not written on here. But again, research credit on this goes to Dave White. This is from the London Times, obviously from June of 1996. I will have a date for you later. The article is entitled Priebke Trial Judges Accused. This article is written by John Hooper, H-O-O-P-E-R, in Rome, reads in part as follows. The trial of the former SS officer Erich Priebke was thrown into confusion yesterday after allegations by the prosecution against the military judges hearing the case. The entire proceedings may now have to begin again. The prosecuting counsel, Antonio Intelisano, I-N-T-E-L-I-S-A-N-O, asked in court for all three judges to be removed. He said he based his request on, quote, a reported offense and events of considerable gravity, unquote, but did not say what they were. A report on the state-owned RAI television network said one of the judges had said at the start of the trial that the verdict was already decided. But other sources yesterday indicated that the alleged offense had been imputed to a court official. Well, again, in light of the many twists and turns that the investigation into Erich Priebke and the Adriatine Caves has taken, it is not surprising to see these accusations of impropriety being surfaced, however accurate they might be. I would also note that there are a great many interests that stand to be embarrassed by a proper investigation into the situation of Erich Priebke, Karl Haas, the Odessa, the collaboration between residual Third Reich elements and various power interests around the world, and indeed that London Independent article that we began this segment with indicates some of the numerous connections that stand to be unearthed by this particular investigation. So again, it should not be too surprising to see attempts to sidetrack or delay the particular investigation. I cannot say that that is what the accusations against the trial judges was intended to do, but in light of the tangled nature of Italian politics, its numerous links with the P2 Lodge of Licio Gelli himself, a former SS officer and a veteran of the Sailor Republic, I don't think that's an unreasonable question to ask. That's all we have time for in this segment. That concludes this segment. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.